Hello and welcome to the Social Recruiting Show. I'm Katrina Collier. I'm, of course, author of The Robot Proof Recruiter and a speaker and facilitator. I'm, of course, joined by my gorgeous co-host, the talented talent acquisition professional, the one, the only, the amazing Glenn Martin.
Hola.
Did Glenn pull a face? I don't know. I decided to ignore him. Today, I'm super excited because we're talking to Mr. Hopkins, who is an extremely experienced agency owner and recruiter in engineering. It's probably the best way to describe him. Yeah. Mark Hopkins, welcome to the Social Recruiting Show.
Welcome, Mark.
Welcome. Oh, yes, you've been here before with the, my former co-host, Audra, who I believe possibly is on a lake right now catching fish.
Audra.
Flying that aeroplane that she has been bought as well.
Oh, yeah. I know. That looks really cool, doesn't it?
I'm so jealous. So jealous.
So we were going to launch into your background, but today we're going to talk about what it really takes to run a recruitment agency, which will be quite
really
cool.
Really takes.
Beforehand, Glenn has a question for you.
Yeah. I mean, and this is going to be like, this is going to be a really super interesting topic. But before we get into that, Mark, just kind of give everybody
a... Actually,
what have you forgotten?
Enterprise alumni, we love you. I'm sorry. Our sponsors, we couldn't do it without you. Honestly, couldn't do it without you. We would not be here. COVID-19. Thank you very much. Right. Sorry. Now Glenn has a question for you. It's like right there on the top of the screen, right above Glenn's head.
It's right above me here.
The other way.
Exactly. Anyway.
Sorry, Mark. Back to you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Back to you,
Mark.
Sorry. So, kind of give the folks a little idea of your background, your journey into recruitment before we kind of get into the topic proper.
Sure. So, what, like all the way from birth, or how do you?
Well, I mean, as much as I'd be interested in that, maybe the condensed version would be probably preferable.
Sure. So, I left school, went to college and did an apprenticeship with the RAF doing aircraft engineering. Finished that, went to uni, did aircraft engineering in university as well. Then finished that, came out the other side, was working for the RAC in the call centre in Bristol. And then some guy phoned up looking to get his car sorted, said, would you like to come and work for us, because I was good on the phone to him. Then found out I did engineering, and then I found out they did engineering recruitment, and they kind of all that was 15-16 years ago, so it's all kind of fallen into place since.
You fell into it.
I don't know. I mean, it sounds like quite a natural organic route into
what,
it, you know,
engineering degree.
Engineering into engineering. Well, it's a bit better than some people like, oh yeah, I basically just got offered a job in recruitment and I took it. So there is a story, there's a flow there, I think.
There is a flow. I mean, years before that, I was like, what the hell's recruitment? Because you saw it advertised everywhere, recruitment consultant, 18-20K, and you're thinking, that's not a bad salary to get into. So when I got that opportunity, I started off as a resourcer.
How does anyone live in London on £18,000-£20,000?
Yeah, I was living in Bristol, though. Yeah, you know.
But that's not your accent, is it?
No, my accent is proper Welsh. So
Proper Welsh.
That's right. I've just lost it over the years living in England. But when I go home, you can hear it.
When I do flick onto the channel that is in Welsh, it's actually lovely to hear the language and hear why it's so rolly, the accent. Because otherwise it just, Anyway, random. Sorry, back to you.
That's right.
I'm quite heat affected. Sorry, it's like quite hot sitting here.
Fine.
But you were talking about your kind of perception of recruitment, Mark, and I think it's an interesting one to touch on because it tees up quite nicely for the show. Like, you know, your perception of recruitment was good wage, could do quite well in that. What was the reality of it once you actually got into it?
I think from anyone on the outside looking into recruitment where you think it's just filling jobs, the reality of it in agency recruitment, 80-90% of it's finding the jobs to fill. And this is where the business development element of it, back in the early days, it was, you know, 99% hammer the phone. Today, it's a lot different to what it was back then. But that was the hard part. And coming from not really a sales background. I mean, the RAC, where I was renewing people's memberships, and then suddenly on the phone trying to sell something, a concept at the end of the day. So, it was difficult, very difficult. And, you know, I, like most recruiters, I went through a few jobs.
Yeah, you do. And how long did you
the
stay?
Hard bit. I hate that bit.
Yeah.
I never understand it. Sorry, Glenn. I never understand anybody saying, I hate cold calling candidates. And you're going, have you tried cold calling to get a job? Yeah, calling people about, would you like a job? Are you interested in this? Yeah. It's so exciting. Mm. Trying to get one, though. Sorry,
cold calling. Yeah, I was going to say, cold calling candidates is a completely different game to cold calling clients. You know what I mean?
To be fair, though, when we all started in recruitment, right, it was probably more accepted by a hiring manager to get a phone call. When the internet really kicked in, they'd just be like, send me an email, stop phoning me. And it became incredibly more challenging then because people switching onto email, you know, they could easily be ignored. So you had to get creative again, right? You had to find different ways of kind of approaching people. So, you know, all of us have gone through that kind of transition, right?
And also as well, before the recession, the last recession, not this one, before 2009, I would pick up the phone about three or four times and pick up 10, 15 jobs. And you know, you work what you could work and then you move forward. Then after 2009, it just changed completely. You picking up the phone 50, 60 times more than you ever picked up the phone to pick up three jobs. It was
you lost your black book. That was when, so if you look at the LinkedIn stats, for example, people weren't online. That's when everyone went online. I might disappear for a second. I just realized I haven't switched over to the cable. So just in case I suddenly... I don't know how flaky I'm being, but I suddenly realised I've plugged it in, not switched to it. So
if how long were you agency side, Mark, before you? And this tees up the subject of
start my own business.
How long were you agency side before you decided, right, now I'm going to set up my own business working for myself?
There's two parts to that answer.
A love gag on there.
There's the bit where I realized I want to be doing this for myself, and then there's the bit I realized that when I could do it for myself. five, 6 years into it, I was at Reed. It was a brilliant company to work for. I felt this is where I want to go. This is the direction I want to go in. And then I made a conscious decision to kind of, and this would tease up to kind of how I would give advice to people to start up as well. I didn't think I had enough exposure to real, raw new business. I felt Reed was a very good company to help you and had a massive sphere of influence. Mm-hmm. And that was one of my weak areas. So I needed to work out how to deal with that. And one of the things was go and work for a small recruitment company, which was like literally jumping in the fire and then realizing how shit you were. And then a couple of years of that, and then I realized, right, there was a moment where me and a company parted ways amicably, and I went, do you know what? And that was it. I went on jury service, and during jury service, I thought, I'm going to start. I ticked all the boxes in my head.
I love the fact you knew this was going out on LinkedIn, and you just didn't say fuck it. You just went, no, I better not say that. Love that.
Yeah,
thank you.
I know.
Police will tell me off now.
any
minute that, now.
So I would say about 10 years, Glenn. 10 years, I think it was, before I started up.
That's an interesting
one. And other than that, I'm going to do it. So what was it like? Day one, right? I am Mark Hopkins, independent recruiter. What did it feel like? Did you feel like, what the hell have I done? Or yay? Or like
It depends when you kind of mark the day one. The day when I started the company, or the day one of starting the company, if that makes sense. Yeah. So
starting the company, not all the palaver that goes before.
So all the palaver. Setting up and palaver before, and we're, I'm going through the whole business plan and getting the spreadsheet out. What can I afford? Where's the money coming from? Who am I going to work with? And all that type of stuff.
Important things, though.
Yeah, really important things. And then
Glenn loves the spreadsheet.
I love a spreadsheet. Yeah, me too. I can make a spreadsheet look amazing.
I'm going to hand over control of the show spreadsheet to you.
We'll talk spreadsheets for the next hour, if that's all right. So what was I saying? I can't say no.
You were talking about like the day one of like when it really started.
So
like
March the 1st, 2016 was the day the company was really clicked, bang, off you go. I was in a little tiny kind of three-bedroom house at the time and yellow walls and everything. And I hadn't got a freaking clue what I was going to do next. BD, email, find candidates, and just build that database. And I planned for, I think, not making money for 6 months, and I made money in the first 6 weeks. So that That's was really my cool. Didn't get paid for 4 months, though. Don't get me started on that part.
Yeah.
But yeah, yes. it was, yeah.
But see, that's one of the things when we talk about, like, again, if I just show the beautiful little banner, like when we're talking about what it really takes to run an agency, actually being paid is a huge part of that.
Yeah.
Like just that, you know, if you're a one person company, they just, they don't see that. They just see limited company.
The mindset shift, right? Yeah.
That's
well, the person in the payroll just doesn't understand. Well, yeah. Oh, hi, it's just me. Bills and, you know, no food.
You're no longer an employee. You're now a supplier and your frame of reference is different. But just a quick question, Mark. How long did it take you between kind of setting up, so, you know, registering HMRC, kind of getting everything in place, insurances, that point through to when you actually, you know, started on March the 1st? What sort of time frame? What runway did you give yourself there?
So when I was – so November I was I left the company. And then I did jury service until December. Then in January, I was engaging with, and this is what I'll talk about, kind of what process I did in a second. I engaged with a third party company to help me start the company. So they did everything for me. But in the background, when I was doing it myself, before I engaged with this company, I was probably going to take up to about 3-4 months anyway. But when these guys, you still got to work with them and go through the whole process of starting the business properly, if that makes sense. So 3 months, 3 months, I would say. Two and a half, 3 months.
So we were talking about like the timing as well, because of the, well, I started, so 2008-09 crash, that gave me the opportunity to leave agency world. I wanted to start training. That's, you know, I sort of was a bit early, went in-house for a while, but that was the time I started. You said, I would have thought, was starting in a boom, but you set me right in the green room before we came on.
Yeah.
Well, what an interesting time.
Yeah, Brexit. Brexit vote happened 3 months after I started, and in an industry that relies heavily on European trade, there was a lull straight away, straight after. It was only a couple of months, but it was a lull. It was like a normal summer lull. So I missed my second opportunity of the year to make some money. And then by the 12th month of business, maybe the 9th to 12th month of business, it started picking back up. So it was nothing to worry about. And then it boomed throughout 2017 into 2018. And then last year, my God, that's all I got to say. It changed completely. Brexit.
That was also because we spent the whole year in a lull of, are we going to no deal? And are we going to, and just, our lives being played with, weren't they?
And then this year, I know we're kind of covering a few years quite quickly here, but then this year it started picking up again in February and March. And then something
weird
happened.
It was a booming start to the year, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was an amazing start to the year. And then something happened in March. I just can't put my finger on what it was.
The inconvenient virus? That's what I call it.
Could be, yeah.
Well, yeah. Mark, just a quick question, though. You know, and I had possibly a very similar scenario where you could think about setting up your own agency, or you could think about just kind of being a one-person business, like in-house recruiter contract. What made you, you know, lean towards or prefer the setting up of an agency?
This is a really good question. When I was working for people, I felt restricted because I always used to get into trouble for the blogs I used to put on LinkedIn, or I always used to get in trouble for the stuff I used to say on LinkedIn. And there was always a corporate kind of
by your colleagues or by the LinkedIn place?
By people within the companies I used to work for, or people would, you know, why would you say, you know, it's because of the corporate kind of feel that companies even still to this day are still trying to push every day to the people. On top
and I'm
of
just seeing what pages you are in my book because of the fact I think what you do is so cool. Hopkins, Mark, 43 and 115.
That's video.
Because I love the fact that you don't do what's corporate. You're very you and very real and very accessible. Isn't that interesting? You were getting in trouble for it.
I was getting in trouble for it. I had a written warning for a blog I wrote where I moan in this blog about other managers not working with you and want to take the piss out of your staff and report your staff to their managers for turning up late. So I wrote a blog about it and I got in trouble. I got a written warning for it. But that was not just me. That was just in general. I always felt that the recruitment industry world is very stuffy. It's very corporate. And, you know, it's a people-to-people business. Why are we not being people to people? And as soon as I started my own business and I started being more frank and more upfront, more honest and put my thoughts out there, the return was tenfold. Enormous. Tenfold.
Yeah. People buy into authenticity, don't they? You know, when you're authentic.
Can I just say, because you just beautifully led to this lovely comment. Thank you, Frank. This is a gorgeous comment. Thanks for all your social recruiting show, share knowledge, feeling of the situation. Just talk. Communication is so important. Humans need it. Professional recruitment as well.
Boom.
That almost sums up what you just said. Thank you.
Definitely.
I quite like the fact you got a written warning. Sorry, I'm still back at that.
Yeah.
That's cool. I had so many written warnings.
so on that point, Mark, you just sort of described the kind of culture and environment you came from. What did you want to put in place? What were the kind of, I don't know, the charter for values. Your business? The values of your business. Gosh. What did you think? These are the things that are going to start this company. Anybody that joins it or works with me, they're going to experience this.
I really thought about values. They weren't created by a marketing team in London. You know what I mean? My values were real. And I actually led with them at the beginning. And now I've not really said many of them anymore because people kind of got to know me. But the biggest one I felt in recruitment that was missing the most is trust. Mm. We just would not trust it. And the only way to demonstrate trust is demonstrate capability. So we had to be honest at the same time. So if we can't do it, we can't do it. If we can, then we'll do it and deliver it when you do it. And then the last value that I always wanted to make sure was dependability as well. So I found in other recruitment agents, especially as a manager and a managing director of a company, a business manager in a company managing teams, I was sacking or people were leaving every 5 seconds. Mm. Clients were like, who am I dealing with this week?
Yeah, no, they don't like that, do they?
They hated that. And so, you know, reliability, dependability, and, you know, I'm always there. So these clients I spoke to 4 years ago coming back to me today and having questions, but well, not so much today, but have come back to me asking questions, can you sort this out? And we haven't spoke to each other for 4 years because they know I'm still there at the end of the phone.
Yeah.
So when you add all of those together, that's just being human, basically. It's just being a normal professional human.
Hence is in the book.
Yeah. When did you sense that kind of shift? Because I'm assuming you did. When you're working for an agency, you're almost behind the brand, right? And then when you start your own company, you're out and front and center. Did you find it a kind of an immediate change in terms of the frame of reference of people having a conversation with you, or did you have to educate them to that was then, this is me now?
It wasn't a conscious thing at the beginning because you're still in corporate world. You know, you're still thinking like the last job that you have to still do X amount BD calls, you have to do this, you have to do that, you have to do that. So you're still thinking the same. What happened was gradually when I started getting more comfortable with doing certain things, it took me a year to do video. When I started getting comfortable with that, that's when it clicked and I went, oh, I can sell like this. What am I doing? And then you start, and then everything then changes. The way you speak, the way you write, the way you write adverts, the way you come across on social media, everything changes.
But I go back to our spring days, Glenn, and people were like, it's Katrina. It's not Katrina at spring. They're not working me because I'm at spring. It was Katrina. They wanted to work with me. And I imagine Mark was the same. So really that side, I can't imagine change. People are like, I like Mark. Mark is my recruiter. He does what I need him to do.
I was thinking also along the lines of the commercials, right? So they're used to dealing with a brand and certain types of commercials, and now you're coming with a new commercial proposition. And it's like, well, actually, so we're just engaging with you.
Yeah.
That's it. And some companies can be really receptive to that. Some can be like, well,
like the procurement department.
Yeah. I should have probably made that a little clearer.
No. It's Friday. I'm heat affected. It's very warm. Really warm.
The one thing I would say when I was doing my business plan, I was going after SME because you could speak to the managing director and you can deal with that guy on the level. And you found that they were just as human as you were, and they swore and they did everything. There's a lot of connection with those type of guys. Mm. So what I tried to do then is just keep my business plan like that and try to keep away from the procurement departments. Mm-hmm. That was HR because of the director said I had to deal with HR. But still be a human. But when you were going down the PSL routes, and when you go down that route, you as a person disappears completely. It becomes clinical and you're just a bunch of words on the page. That's all you are when you go down that road.
So that's a really interesting point, because obviously perhaps if you were thinking of, you know, kind of setting up your own agency now, you might think, oh, I can take some of my current clients with me, happy days, right? And that's not often going to be the case. You've got to really think about the clients that you want to kind of engage with first and foremost, and the ones that will engage with you. So you have to do a bit of kind of due diligence, a bit of mapping, really.
Oh, gotcha. And you say about clients coming with you. I thought I had five or six clients that would just suddenly go, yeah, we'll give you loads of jobs. Woohoo. Picked up the phone.
But you weren't on the PSL.
Not on the PSL. Mm. Didn't want to know. Took me 2 years to get one of them back. And in the end, I just brought new ones. Just got new ones.
Yeah. So that contradicts what I was saying before. So I was thinking you were meaning they think of that him as Reed, not him as Mark. But actually, you were talking about the PSL. So I took a minute to get there, but I got there and I am heat affected. Love this. Mark kills it on video. Oh. And we do have the, I want to get a written warning. And Debbie said, amen. Yeah, I think because we're all quite rebellious. I don't know if you saw Adam. I'm flashing these up periodically, but I'm not.
No, no, I'm looking at them. They're great. They're great.
So, at least you got a warning because Evan's in the US and of course they wouldn't get a warning. They just get their 2 weeks notice. So whereas we're a little harder to fire, aren't we?
Yeah.
Blame the EU.
Does that count now then?
I don't know. Well,
I'm not going. Let's not go there. Let's not.
No.
Let's go there though.
You've told me off already.
Let's go there in the respective. I can't remember what it was I sent you that I said we have to talk about this, but it was bollocks. Advice about starting an agency, wasn't it? Making it out that was a lot easier. But this is something you've had to tackle, though, isn't it? Because you're doing engineering recruiting. Mm. And whether we're in or the out of the EU, like, how have you kept your motivation going? How have you not just gone, I'm going to go get a job? Or
so I've been doing engineering recruitment for 15 years.
Right.
The only way to describe it, there's never been a good time for them. They've always been smashed in the face by one thing or the other. I know I've got managing director of engineering companies. They've been there for 30, 40 years, and they've never in 30, 40 years had a break. They've had some good years, but they've never had this boom that people talk about. And it's always been a little bit up and down, a little bit up and a little bit down. So they've never seen this great break for them. And this is why a lot of them believe Brexit might help them. Some of them don't. You know, there's a massive mix. I did a survey last year about this with all my clients, and it was 50-50. It was mixed. Right. It was very similar to the referendum result. So from that perspective, they have seen this before. They've seen recessions. They've seen in the middle of the last 10 years, they've seen a lull, which was Brexit, and they've seen a little lull before that again. So they've never really seen it. And then other things change as well. So if you're in the aerospace industry, they have their own little recessions. Or if you're in the defense industry, they have their own little recessions. So if you're feeding into Formula One or anything like that, they all have their problems. Something changes and affects the entire market. What we're starting to see at the moment, everything's slowly aligning. This recession or this whatever you want to call this is aligning most markets.
Inconvenient virus.
Yeah, inconvenient virus.
China I'm really virus. Hoping that would... No.
No, I know. No, so
animal payback.
Animal payback, So what we're getting now, and this is why I'm staying very positive about this, there will be a bounce back. And I know companies with full order books, furloughed their staff. They're just waiting for the right timing. It's all about timing at the moment. Is it June? Is it July? Is it August? But it will be.
And how will we do it 2 meters apart?
I don't know.
Exactly.
I don't know.
One thing I'd like to ask you, Mark, is in that first, I don't know, 12 months, because you know, like I say, that first 12 months is a massive learning curve, right? Regardless of what you think you know, that first 12 months, it can really shock you. I mean, I remember making some real blunders around pricing, and I'm just at the time I was like, "I've got this in the bag." And then you reflect now, and you think, "Oh my god!" What things did you learn in that first 12 months?
I'm still learning about pricing. I've been doing this 10 and a half years. You never get it right. There are some people who think it's too cheap, and something is too much. It's like you can't win, honestly.
That's true.
The first one is believing in yourself, because when it comes to pricing, you do that mistake of going, yeah, I'll do that for 10%, and then you realize then it becomes a noose. 10% is the worst. I know I shouldn't talk about pricing, but for me, that was the worst thing I ever did, was agree to this charge rate with this one particular company. Then it became a noose around my neck for the rest of the year, and I couldn't get out of it. And it was just one thing after the next. So then I set myself a target, right? I'm only charging this, and I'm not going to go below this, and I'm never going to go below this. And I never did after that. So it was that realization. So a bit more belief in the way I was selling myself and kind of doing that. But other things, like you don't realize you're doing it, which is procrastinating. Oh my god, I used to procrastinate 2-3 hours a day, just doing nothing. And in the end, what I had to set those 2-3 hours a day to do the things I want to be doing. Do you know what I mean? So
but also, if it's I was talking about this during the week, but I still, because of my childhood stuff, which is pretty deep, but I still have quite a fear of rejection. So for me to do new business development stuff directly, like me call Mark and go, Mark, would you like to hire me? I really struggle with that. Like it's really like, but he could say no, and then he's saying no to me personally, blah, blah, blah. So if I have to do that, you guarantee I'll get to the end of the day and I'll have done so much other stuff, but not it.
Yeah.
And I now laugh at myself over that, and I give myself a bit of self-compassion and go, okay, I understand. Have you done anything that's built your business? Have you? And like try, and I'll find creative ways to get around it. But that often is the procrastination. It's something you are really either fearful of doing or like literally bores you senseless. It'll be one or the other. I think the avoidance tactics are hilarious if you're prepared to step out and look at them for what they are, you know. And
I like the way that people describe procrastination as like a monkey on their shoulder. I love that description of it, because that's where it was. It was just this, hey, let's look at cat videos. Oh yeah, good idea. Let's look at cat videos. And you kind of just, what am I doing? And when you pick yourself up on it, you do it less and less. But what I used to do.
What were you avoiding? Was it business development?
Just like, oh, do you know what? I need to speak to those 10 people. And then you kind of, but these cat videos, they look really good though, these cat videos. I'll do that tomorrow. And in the end, you kind of went, oh shit, I really pushed this to the limit.
Did that with my but again, that's probably, there was some apprehension about speaking to those people, because it was
but that's that, when you recognize what you're doing, why you're procrastinating, then you need to then work on that, and that's in the 12 months 18 months I think I took me to deal with. The other thing was consistency.
I took years, by the way, everyone. Years
I'm not saying I'm
to get me to do
this. I'm not saying I'm some sort of Jedi now where I can't procrastinate. I still fucking procrastinate.
Yeah.
But now I recognize when I need to do something. And that was coming to the next thing, which is consistency. And then I planned. And when I planned, I went, all right, but you've got to change the plan as well to what you're doing. So you've got to, it's really difficult to explain it. The plan is fluid. You've got to do these set key things. And then if something big comes in, you've got to focus on the big thing and then go back to the plan. And then continue like that. That was the hard part.
Did you? I mean, one thing I learned in that first 12 months is make sure you qualify the scope of work properly. Oh. Don't dive in being grateful. Say yes, I can do it, and then suddenly after that, you've signed yourself up. You suddenly discover how big the scope of work is.
I'm a really outdoorsy person, so I do like. Mountain biking, I've done some rock climbing and stuff like that. Whenever you do rock climbing, there's a moment at the top where you just go woohoo, and then you step back for some reason, which is the worst thing you can ever do when you get to the top of a mountain. And that is like when you get work in your first year, you get euphoric, you think and you didn't check it, you didn't see if it was worth working, you didn't do all the standard stuff, you just got excited that someone emailed you a job and it's at whatever percentage that you think it's all right, and then you start working it, and 6 weeks has gone by, 3 months has gone by, six months has gone by, and you still haven't filled the damn thing, and you're thinking, where did I go wrong yet? Had you checked? You know, you couldn't have dealt with it, or it was the wrong job.
It's well, needless to say, and I'm sure we all agree, each year is still a learning, that you never get to a point where you're like, I know it all now, I can run this. Each year you learn something new.
100%.
So what I want to talk about it, sorry, so selfishly, this is not about me. So you took the step into video, which has been to your benefit, but that must have involved some, because I've seen the outtakes, some time.
Yeah.
How have you learned to make it so it doesn't take all day?
So that filling in the gap of procrastination, that's what I started doing with video as a part of that.
And it built business.
Yeah, but that was the point. I said, I've always wanted to do this. I've seen people do it, but I have no freaking idea how to deal with it.
So I had
to learn. So that's that was one of the things I started doing with my procrastinating time. Instead of looking at cat videos on YouTube, I was watching YouTubers on YouTube and how they dealt with it and what other recruiters were doing on YouTube. And then just kind of, right, how'd you do that? How'd you do lighting? I know my lighting's crap today, but how'd you do lighting? How'd you make your mobile look like a cinema?
You're saying lighting. I don't know what I thought you were saying then. Yes, lighting. Your lighting today is not great. You're lucky there. Mine's like clearly too much. I'm like the opposite extreme right now.
I know.
I'm being blinded out by the sunlight. I'm loving our pandemic weather. We've had months of sunshine. I'm used to sitting here in overcast weather and the lighting being fine. But yes.
Oh, weirdly enough, in the last 6 weeks, all my lighting stopped working except for this one bulb.
The best outtake videos. I actually think your outtake videos are the thing that's got your business.
Do they? I put
money on it. Truly. Yeah. They're just the best.
That was the thing, though. I thought, as I made all these videos, there's probably more than I've ever put out there. So I just thought I'd just do a minute video of outtakes, and yeah, it got some lovely responses.
Went viral.
One did.
How do you decide what to talk about then? Because in a way, you're saving yourself time, aren't you? Because you're kind of answering questions.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So at the beginning, it was candidates asking me questions. I think, oh, that'll make a good video, and I used to write that down. And then over time, and I started doing some research, and I'm thinking, you know, that would be a good question to answer. And then I started like looking into it, and it just evolved from there. And in the end, I had a whiteboard of a list of stuff that I picked up on LinkedIn or I picked up on Facebook, and just decided to do a bit of research, do a video on it, might have some knowledge on it myself or whatever. But you have to fact check yourself as well, so it's not BS that you're saying, because like you were saying the other day.
That was actually quite funny writing the book, actually. Because there are so many stats out there, and I would have to, because everything is fact checked on there, like every single whatever is to this survey, and it's all LinkedIn. Yeah. It's quite extraordinary. The work that Kogan Page put into making sure that was all right. But oh my gosh, dude, I drilled down and discovered most of it was just pulled out of the air by somebody 10 years ago who went, yes, 80% of jobs aren't advertisable. Really? Try and prove that one. It is not anywhere. There is no proof of that.
There's no proof.
It's just shit like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And that was the thing. I think I've done about 80 videos, I think. I've done about 80. And none of them have had people come back to me saying that's a lot of bullshit. They've all had positive responses, except for because I started doing 1 minute engineering videos last year, and I need to start doing more explaining how things work. Mm. And one guy on YouTube tried to pull it apart, and then I just sent him a link. Yeah. Prove it right.
Chris Allen just confused me doing that, but I just realized I think he's tagged his friend in. I was like, what's Chris doing? What's Bradley Platt? What does that have to do with? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Pals.
There must be a whole conversation thread. I'm not going, I'm missing less. It's quite cool that LinkedIn has finally done that, that we can have the comments. Because really we actually use a tool called StreamYard to stream this. Yeah. And I can actually pull the comments in now. That only started last week.
Mark, give us some, you know, fledgling businesses some powerful stats about how good video is or has been for you. What have you got from video?
So I'll give you my stats then. Most my videos will have at least 4, maybe 5 candidates. Whenever I post on LinkedIn, 4 or 5 candidates will message me and we have a conversation, definitely from my sector. Then you'll have the kind of the ancillary to
and
that.
And you're in a candidate short sector, aren't you, in engineering?
Oh, that was one of the reasons why. And doing the 1 minute videos on engineering wasn't about drawing candidates, it's about demonstrating capability and coming back to that trust. He knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, he's not gonna waste my time. How refreshing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He knows what a jet engine does, and you know, so that was the reason behind that. It wasn't about drawing people in, it was just basically content. Just putting some good content out. So when I used to do them, then there's videos that you guys don't see that get marketed out in a mailer to clients, which is the other side of the fence, which I do post one or two as well. So in a very similar format to you see on LinkedIn, these are more towards clients saying how to write better job adverts, how to find better candidates, where's good resources for free to find candidates, and when you get stuck, who'd you come and speak to? And
Mark Hopkins.
Yeah, exactly. And then so there's the more marketing.
We'll snippet that at me out for you.
Yeah. Give me.
Me.
but that's the point of it. It's that, you know, you it's great. Social media, by the way, gives away a lot of recruiters' tricks and tips. And it can be copied. I've been doing a lot of wording posts lately on LinkedIn. And then someone said to me, have you searched your posts on LinkedIn? I was like, no, I haven't. And I searched them and I found that hundreds of people are just copying and pasting my posts and claiming them as their own.
You've become Bridget, whatever her name is, that everybody copies.
I am now the new Bridget.
You write some rubbish and everyone copies it and off it goes. And it's crazy. Yeah, there's art rubbish, clearly.
But that's why I went back to. That's why I'm going to go back
that's
to video.
Crazy! I've never once thought to check if someone's coughing and pasting. I'd be so offended.
Seriously,
I'd be so angry.
But that's the great thing about video as well. It's really hard to replicate video because you've got to be good at replicating video, and there's very few people on LinkedIn that can replicate. Very few. But they got their own shit, so they got to do their own stuff rather than replicate you.
Exactly.
And to be fair, imitation is a form of flattery, you know, but it's kind of,
plagiarism.
Depends how precious you
Nobody
are.
Nobody can imitate you, Glenn. Look at that beard. Only beard envy going on out there.
Totally.
This is pure laziness. Anybody can imitate it.
I still want a beard oil sponsor. I think that would be hilarious.
We are looking for
a beautiful enterprise alumni and a beard oil. That's what I want. This is what I'm aiming
at. What I like about what you're doing with the clients, though, Mark, is you're trying to give them more information about how they can better position themselves to try and do it themselves. They're almost like, you're almost saying, look, if you do this and this, you could start the process yourself. These are the sort of things that would help you. But equally, I think they're looking at thinking, well, we could try that. Or actually, the easiest option is just to get Mark in and do it for us.
And that will be, you know, every 1,000 emails that you send out with that information, you probably get 1% of them coming back and doing that. Mm. But it's about the consistency then. It's coming back to consistency and always having a message. I mean, you could make a video and and send it out 20 times a year, the same video, and you won't believe the amount of people who still watch it and take the tips but still come back to you. I've had people come back to me after 2 years of mailing them and so forth. So it's basically it's selling for you ahead of you and creating this sphere of influence around you.
But I bet you are the only engineering recruiter in the UK that is sending consistently a mailer with videos in it that help customers or their clients.
I don't know the facts, but I'm probably.
I put money on it.
Hopefully.
I think, you know, for me, there is almost a perception that, you know, every recruiter is on video now. Everybody recruiters using social and stuff, but they're not. They're generally not. It's still a minority that are really using it effectively.
So Orchard would call it inbound marketing. We recruiters are just sending videos to clients. Mm. One is a marketing expert, one is not.
But that's the thing. I mean, I remember, both of you, do you remember the flurry of kind of recruiters talking about the job spec with a kind of trendy background, like, oh, this is da-da-da-da. And there was a whole spat of those. And everybody seemed to replicate it, and then they just kind of died off a little bit because actually the quality of that is not real.
That's so boring as well.
They are dull as.
What I wanted to do with that, by the way, I wanted to go to the client, walk around their walk around their shop and show them where they're going to work and stuff like that. But I really struggled to get clients to agree to it.
Yeah,
that was my
Like Audra would talk about that. So the work that she's done previously as well, especially actually. Resonates, but major because she's changed sectors. But the internal marketers are doing stuff like that now. She's just brilliant stuff. She's also quoted in the book.
She is indeed.
Sorry.
And she's the best bass guitarist ever.
Yeah, exactly.
And I actually have some quite hair envy with the whole. Actually, currently, I think it's pink going on because all I have now is grey.
So,
COVID
what
hair.
Else? Right. What other channels? What other channels really work for you, Mark? Social channels, obviously LinkedIn, you've got video. What others really work for you at the moment?
I think LinkedIn at the moment is probably the best channel for what I try to do. Facebook, Facebook, my business group hasn't really grown. Mm. Organic growth on Facebook is difficult. That takes a lot of energy. Weirdly enough, I grow on Twitter for very little effort. And I don't know if that's linked to LinkedIn somehow, where people see my LinkedIn, then they see me on Twitter, and then I kind of grow from there.
Twitter has a higher active user base.
Yeah, I know. And a lot of ranty people. and I've also tried Instagram.
Sorry, my Labrador was stuck.
I've also tried Instagram, but like TikTok, Instagram and TikTok, for a generation, I know that, you know, everyone's on there. I know you're going to disagree with me, but I'm trying to find the audience on there. And I think it requires as much work as I am on LinkedIn to do those challenges. You don't think so?
It depends. Again, it's about where your clients are. So yeah. For me, for HR recruiters, TA, actually, there's a lot on there.
Yeah.
And so I find it really easy to keep in touch with a lot of my clients on there. But I guess a lot of them don't have their Instagram username as something obvious. So you kind of happen upon it, or it comes up in conversation, or
that's it.
Or you know, your Facebook friends, and you see they're sharing stuff. And I actually just find Instagram. It's got a higher active user base. But it comes down to, I imagine it's possibly more the engineering sector, but then they share what they're doing and what they're creating, don't they? So I think it's experiment, isn't it? And find
it is.
What's
it is.
Right.
What started to happen on things like TikTok, you've got young engineers now working in these companies. They got to the point now in their level of professionalism and they're churning out work, proud of it. They take an Instagram of it, or they make a TikTok video of it, because that's trendy now on those platforms to do that. So this is where I'm trying to kind of, how do I go from 3-minute videos to 60-second videos, and how do I manage that? How do I put a message across that's worth putting across to that audience? So that's a thing in the background.
With the IGTV, you can just have IGTV, it run over and people will just watch the rest anyway. But it's just editing the size.
Yeah.
So, but it's like repurposing content, which is what we do with this as well, because you've got to watch for the time suck on the return, haven't you? So, you know, and then we just get, Glenn writes a blog off our shows and I strip this out and make it into a podcast. So it's like repurposing that as well. Exactly. I'm very aware, believe it or not, that we have all of 4 minutes left, because this is just extraordinarily fast.
Jeez, we'd have to do another
podcast. Have we set the world to right in like, was there a big point you wanted to get across in the BS advice that you're seeing that's going out to people?
So the one thing
I would say is energy. To run your own business, whether it's a recruitment agency or not, is going to take every single bit of energy you never knew you had.
Yeah. Mm. Well, it
will consume you. So don't do it if you don't love it. That's a big one.
But there's also that myth that you just start up and then off you go and great, because you've got experience in recruitment, you can just crack on. There really is what the track record of what you've been to date, where have you got the jobs from, how you've got the jobs, and then realizing that 99% of your first 6 months is going to be BD, because you can't rely on shit you're bringing with you. So that was one of the big, that was the reason why you wanted me on you.
Big eye-opener.
Yeah. But also as well, a lot of people don't realize, when you start your own business, there are people in your life that will probably reflect their fears of starting business to you. And that is a big one, I found.
Their money values.
Oh my God. They're like, why would you do that? Why don't you get a job? Why would you want to start?
Go get a job. What are you doing? Yeah. How are you going to earn income? I still get that 10 and a half years on, by the way.
5 years on, yeah.
And sometimes I literally go, I don't know where my next bit of income is coming from, but I know it's coming. And they're like, oh my God, how do you live like that? Because it is their values. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
It is their values. Yeah. They're reflecting on you.
Yeah.
Don't absorb that. It's really hard. But then it's ups and downs. So much. It's a roller coaster, a real roller coaster ride. I'm going through it right now, right at the bottom. We're all at the bottom of this roller coaster.
Yeah.
But now it's about getting out of it. How do you get out of it? So it's there. Everything is right there in your head.
Mm. And I've talked about that thing of, I go onto LinkedIn, I ignore all the posts, literally, unless I'm tagged in one, and I go to the notifications and I congratulate, even if I don't know them, every single person that's got a job. Because to me, it's like, I am not going to focus on the fact there are no jobs out there or my business will fold. Mm-hmm. So it's like redirecting, you're saying, it's in your head. So direct it to, like you were saying, your engineering clients know that they're going to start up. So I'm going to focus on that. I just have to get to that point.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you're pipelining and you're just getting ready and keeping in touch with everyone. And
I've got to be honest with you. In the last 5 years, there's been months where things have dropped off completely. Because either you forgot to do something, or the market changed and that particular part of the market is dead and you have to move to the next thing. So you kind of get used to this 3 months on, 9 months off. Sorry, 3 months off, 9 months on, and then 6 months, and you kind of get used to that over the when you're self-employed. But you then manage your money. You manage your finances. You don't empty your bank account as soon as you get paid. You plan for the future. Mm. And I know it sounds horrible. You plan for the worst as well. I know that's bad, but you've got to.
Nobody planned for this.
No.
I planned for that. I didn't plan for this.
I know what you mean. I used to joke to my wife, the reason I got this credit card, in case shit happens, and then all of a sudden shit's happening. should we use this?
Yeah. Just temporarily? Can you get me through?
We'll just get some groceries on this. I don't know.
There is what I've noticed, certainly within the kind of broader recruitment community, is a actual groundswell in community support, you know, from everybody in it. I think that's one of the really positive things that's come out of this, this kind of, it's everybody really, you know, kind of gathering together and wanting to help one another. That's a real positive, right?
We, a couple of guys and myself tapped into this years ago, and it's still going. It's called the Recruiter's Arms, and it's for recruiters. Yeah. And we've been doing it now for a few years. It's not as big as a group as you used to, but there's still a good core group of people in there that just help each other, giving each other advice and stuff. When you become self-employed, they come to you. People start realizing that, and they ask for advice. And, you know, we're chatting. Mm. In the background, all of us are chatting, passing work, passing ideas onto each other and thoughts onto each
other. And also, I think it's really easy when you initially start to get bogged down in, I have to have a perfect website, I have to have this and I have to have that. Actually, no, you don't. Yeah. Not as a recruitment agency, like that specifically, no. Just get on
I'm on my second website. That's how many websites.
I think I'm on the third. Is that a rising tide lifts all ships? Oh,
Sophie Power.
We need to get Sophie back on again. Mind you, a special you, and I've just forgotten who's next week, so I'm going to look that up. Mr. Hopkins, people find you. I mean, I clearly know that LinkedIn.
Yeah, and bus shelters. No, drinking 2020, especially this time of year. Just LinkedIn. I'm a big advocate of LinkedIn. I'm also on Twitter. If you try to reach out to me on Facebook, as you know, I just rant about politics over there. So.
Yeah, I'm so close to unfollowing you. I'm like,
And the Recruiter's Arms. How can people kind of find that and kind of join?
Yeah, I do vet people going in these days. We've had a few weirdos. I'll be honest with you. So just reach out to me and we'll have a quick chat and just tell you what it's about. It's literally a group of people just openly chatting about shit.
Love that.
Basically,
wicked. I love that. It's cool. Great group. Yeah. Beautifully.
Sorry. And there's just, a beautiful comment from Lisa. It's Lisa CD. I'll keep her in hiding behind the CD. Repurposing the way you reflect yourself outwardly is kind of like Kung Fu. Instead of attacking, you take the blows, absorb them, repurpose them, push them out in a positive energy. That's just beautiful.
Cool.
Beautiful way to end the show. Next week we have Mr. Jim Barris with, actually, thank you, Mark. You swapped weeks, didn't you? Poor Jim. He's been a bit poorly. So hopefully Jim will be with us next week. Absolutely no idea. I can't remember what we're talking about, but it will be good. We will be here at 10 a.m. Eastern and 3 p.m. UK time.
Yeah, UK time.
UK time. I know. I'm just waiting for you to hold off to calling it London time. Greenwich, and I'm right near Greenwich, London time. Yeah. No, anyway, Mark, thank you so much for all of that.
Thank you.
Absolutely brilliant.
Awesome,
as
Mark.
Thanks for having me. No, I appreciate that. Some really, really good information in there. So, and thank you everyone for all your comments and your questions and your feedback. And we shall see you all this time next week. Have a good weekend, everybody. Bye, guys.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.